Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Joining me in center ring today, we have Karen McMahon. Karen McMahon does two things that inside of them have so much philosophy. This is going to be a chock full of information interview. Karen, I mean, I've done a lot of divorce coaches. I've talked to a lot of divorce coaches, but I've never talked to a divorce coach, Karen, who has her own coaching team. Oh. I mean, you really made this service into a business beyond a sole individual. What made you do that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that. So I think two things. One is when I first got into the business, I knew that I didn't want my business to be geocentric. So I was very quick to get up a website and market myself that way. And I started getting more leads than I could handle, which number one was pretty exciting.
Very.
And I didn't want, you know, it's divorce. You can't say, you know, check back in with me in 3 or 6 months. And so I wanted to service the people coming to me. And then the second thing is I've always been in leadership and I love leading and pulling out the best in people. And so the thought of starting a coaching team, because so many coaches are great coaches, but they're not great business people and marketers. And so they're not actually coaching. And I thought, wow, this could be a triple win. I could help more divorcees. I can help coaches actually coach. I can be in leadership and grow my business. And so that was the plan from pretty early on.
I really like that. I'm in mediation and there is no such thing as a mediation agency where you are a firm or a practice where you have more than one mediator. It's so sorely needed in my industry. So when I started talking with you and getting to know you better, and you said that you have a coaching team, I said, okay, so it really can be done in this position, this work as a solopreneur. That's how most people look at themselves, as a solopreneur. But see, you took it one step farther, and this has stuck with me since we initially talked, and that is you don't hire coaches unless they've graduated from the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching.
That's right. That's the school that I went through. IPEC is the acronym, and it's, if not the best, one of the best coaching institutes in the world. And it one of the cornerstones of IPEC is they train us in emotional energy and coaching around people's emotional energy. And given that my niche was divorce, which is so chock full of emotion, I wanted to make sure that my entire team was able to use that tool and that skill set with anybody who came to us.
I can tell, first of all, just by speaking with you, you know, when we initially met and had a conversation, I said, this is a woman who's very organized, who has a point of view, a philosophy, a forward moving outlook, and really wants to extend herself in the divorce field. So I just, I praise you for that. And anybody listening to, everybody listening to this, please know the level of competence that not only comes out of the Institute, but that also comes out of Karen, and I'm assuming all of your coaches. But you just presented the perfect segue. Emotional energy. This was one of the first things I wanted to talk about with you. So I have two things written down. A, emotional energy. You get to the root of people's emotional reactiveness while they're going through divorce, and anybody going through divorce knows exactly what emotional reactiveness is. So I want you to talk about that for a second, and please segue into the 7 levels of emotional energy.
Right. So we only know what we know, and And when stress hits, we're usually just replaying what happened when we were kids in our household, right? And so you explode, you implode. I come from a big, loud Italian family, so there's a lot of yelling. Someone else comes from, I don't know, a family where, you know, you shut down. And so under normal circumstances, we're all like pretty good, you know, like when there's no stress, everyone shows up in their best. However, life is filled with trials and tribulations. And so we have so many opportunities to notice what our stress reaction is, how we handle difficult individuals in difficult circumstances when faced with a stressful situation. And divorce is at the top of the list because of its multifaceted and moving pieces and uncertainty and fear that comes with it.
If I may, just for a second, it's even harder to deal with than death, because with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's 5 stages of grief, when you need to get over death, divorce has 2 more. Divorce has 7 stages of grief because the person you're divorcing is still living. And so you still have to deal with them, especially if you have children. And I just kind of wanted to insert that because your talk about emotional energy is so important.
Yeah. And I often say that because, you know, the saying is divorce is second to death. And many of us would argue, it's more longstanding and it's more difficult because of the ongoing interaction, especially if it's really high conflict. And so you're dealing with that afterwards.
What are the 7 levels? Do you remember them all?
Of course I do. Just let me give you a little bit of context. So the belief is that we don't just have emotions. Our emotions come from something, and they come from either an experience, or in divorce, they come from a thought. And so the thought is, I'm a terrible person for getting divorced, or my ex is going to take me for all of my money, or my soon-to-be ex is going to take the kids away from me. Or the thought, excuse me, the thought is hardwired into the emotion. And so things could be fine. You could be having a fine day and all of a sudden you start ruminating about something and you lodge onto this thought, or more likely this thought story. And all of a sudden you're no longer at peace. You're tense. Your shoulders are up against your earlobes. And so our thoughts are hardwired into our emotions. And the reason I say that is because people so often say, I want to change my feeling. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be fearful. I don't want to be blank. And they try to change it at the emotion, but it's almost like a running train. It's already moving from the thought. So you have to go back to the thought. But before we get there, the thought story is hardwired into the emotion. The emotion is hardwired into the action. So if I have a story that I'm screwed, I've had this horrible divorce, and now, you know, my bully ex is going to take me for all I have. So now I feel like I feel my thought is I'm a victim. My feeling is apathy. I can't do anything. I'm hopeless. I'm helpless. And so what do? I do nothing. I don't find my support team. I kind of crawl under the covers, or I avoid. The thought hardwired into the emotion hardwired into the action. So that's the concept. And so with all 7 levels, there's a thought, a feeling, and an action. And we're not going to get into all of that today. But I think that the thing that would be most helpful for people is to understand the 7 levels just from the emotional word. So I'm going to run through them quickly, and then we'll just talk about a few of them. So you have apathy, right? That's victim. And then you have anger, right? That's your conflict stage. So that's level 1 and 2. And if you thought about it, level 1 and 2 are what we would call catabolic. Catabolic is life depleting. A cancer cell is catabolic. Catabolic is life depleting. And so if you think about it, when you're feeling apathetic or you're feeling angry, it it's a very heavy emotion that pulls the life out of you. When we go up from anger, we go to what I consider the gateway. It's the big bad F word, forgiveness.
I love the F word. I love referring to it like that.
So forgiveness is really hard for those of us going through a divorce. So you have apathy, anger, forgiveness, and now you go up higher. And I want you to think about literally emotionally levitating up. You go from forgiveness to compassion, compassion to peace, peace to joy, and joy to absolute passion, level seven. Level seven, and I'll talk about level seven to give you a flavor of what it is. Level seven is absolute passion. Level seven, for those of you who meditate, would be when you get into that zone and everything melts away. Absolute passion, for those of you who have children, is probably the moment your baby was handed to you and you experienced the miracle. Your feet probably didn't hit the ground for a week or two. You just, almost nothing could upset you because you were just in such a just incredible place. For those of you who pray or you have a religious belief, you might have felt, you know, the overcoming of the Holy Spirit or a connection to touching God's skirt in some way. None of us really live in level seven. It's a level that we touch. And for those of us who work really hard, maybe we touch it a little bit more often. Internal work, spiritual and emotional work. So that's level seven. The other side of the scale is level one, which is victim, which is super heavy and difficult. And when we talk to our clients, what we help them understand is where they're coming from. So I was just speaking to a client earlier today, and she recently had a loss in her life. She's over 4 years into her divorce. And so she's spending a lot of time in level one and two, understandably. In fact, for the entire world with COVID and the storms and the weather changes, it makes sense that a lot of people struggle in level one and two. The fact that it makes sense doesn't necessarily mean it's good for us or that we have to stay there. And what the seven levels of energy does is it invites you to the belief that you can choose, regardless of personalities or circumstances, to step into your emotional elevator, hit level five, go up to peace, and be in peace, even though he or she is doing X, Y, and Z, and the court is moving too slow for you.
Okay, I'm writing down emotional elevator. I'm stealing this. I love these two. This is perfect. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, and not all IPEC coaches work this way, but for me, I have found level three, yes, the F word, to be the gateway. Level three is the thought is responsibility. The feeling is forgiveness. And the action is cooperation. Now let's unpack that a little bit.
Please.
So what do you mean by responsibility? So let's take a scenario. You're talking to a fella who married, I do a lot of high conflict, so just for the sake of this, I'm going to say who married someone with a personality disorder. And that person with the personality disorder is going through the divorce and spending a lot of money and telling the children things she shouldn't tell them, and all of these things are happening. And so our fella, let's call him John, has every reason to be frustrated and angry and worried about the children. And so she does something. So let's say she tells the kids something that has them all upset, and he's furious, right? He's in level two, like full out ready to throw emotional grenades across the room. And I'm coaching him and I say, okay, so let's look first at what's your part. And let's take a look at that. And so, well, my part is, so I would help John get to the point where he was saying, now that I've worked with you a while, my part is, I know how she shows up. And I keep wanting her to show up differently. So part of my part is that I'm really in resistance of how she shows up. And it keeps getting me angry. And I'm just really struggling with that. Okay. Can you, level three is thought hardwired into emotion. When you listen to yourself say that, can you find a way to forgive yourself given how hard the personality is and how hard the situation is? Yes, I can. Okay, we know she has a personality disorder, diagnosed or not. She didn't ask for it. She didn't put it on one morning. Can you forgive her for having that wiring? Not for all of the hurtful things she's done, but simply for having that wiring. Okay, so now he's seen his part, right? Which is he tends to be in resistance. He's like, yeah, I can forgive myself, definitely. And if I work really hard, I guess I could forgive her at least a little bit. Okay, that's good. What does that do to how you're going to engage? So on level two, when you're in anger, the action is defiance. You're basically fighting with what is. It shouldn't be, she shouldn't have, I shouldn't have to deal with, like this whole, it still is, but I'm using all my energy fighting it anyway and getting nowhere fast. Level three, I've taken responsibility. I'm feeling some forgiveness for me and her. Now I can cooperate with what is. So what does that look like? Okay, so she told the kids things, and then you help them create the strategy. Is cooperating going to her in a way she could hear to say, I'm concerned about the kids and can we agree not to share? Or is that talking to a wall? Do you go to the kids and do you cooperate with what is by saying, hey kids, let's talk about how you feel and what you heard and can I share something different? Like, so you want to address it. But what we typically do going through divorce is we pull out our arsenal of emotional grenades and we start lobbing them across the room at the other person, and shrapnel's falling everywhere, especially on the kids. And so when you learn how to shift up, and so the question is, how am I thinking about this? What's a thought that would serve me better, that would bring me to forgiveness or compassion or peace? And it's a practice. It's just like sit-ups. You don't just get up one day and start doing 200 sit-ups. It's a practice. You do it every opportunity, and God knows divorce will give you many, many opportunities. And little by little, you get better at it. Now, I started doing this work like 10 years ago, especially with the emotional energy chart. And I have two emerging adults, and they sometimes are my place where I get to practice. And so I can have my human reaction to whatever I was told or what's going on. And then I can step back and say, okay, I'm clearly in level one or two around this. Where do I want to be? Who do I want to be? And from what level of energy do I want to address this situation? And it's like walking into an emotional elevator and choosing your floor.
Okay, first of all, I'm so calm listening to you.
Yes.
This is the best part of my day so far. You have the calmest voice, the nicest way of clearly explaining things. And yes, getting on this emotional elevator feels like a very good trip so far.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to go through the rest of them, but just at this point on the third floor,
yes,
forgiveness, this is actually a process that, as you said, with your own children, you can use this in all parts of your life, not just divorce. It just happens to come in very handy in, yes, divorce.
This is, you know, one of the things about coaching clients through divorce is while we coach individuals through divorce, our much greater mission is coaching people into a level of conscious living and intentionality that's going to allow them to have a beautiful life for the rest of their lives.
Yes. Oh, I can clearly see that. This is great. The world needs this, Karen, so much. I can't tell you. All right. So we have successfully gone through the third floor and we're on compassion.
Yeah. And so there's another piece of this that I'll just mention, which is we do an assessment, and through this assessment, you figure out what your primary emotional level is. And so, for instance, level 4 is concern, compassion, service. The thought is concern, the feeling is compassion, the action is service. And so for those of you listening, you'll even know, like, I am a very service-oriented person. I serve my church, I serve my kids, I serve my family, I serve my clients. Like, I love being in service. It's how I'm wired. And so level 4 is one of my really key levels. When you're under a stress reaction again, you might be able to go above what's my responsibility and can I forgive? You might be able to say, you know what? I care about this individual, even though I don't want to be married to him or her. And I can feel compassion for, so people can act really displeasing just out of fear. Like, so often, even the bully in the room, he or she is really just scared to death. And so level 4 is when you can say, I'm concerned about, I don't know, the other parent of my children. And I have compassion for what they're going through. I know them well enough. I've been with them enough years. And I want to be of service. Now, this is very different than I'm a codependent and I'm going to throw myself off the list and do for others in the hopes of getting love. That's not what this service is. This service is I care and I want to be of service. And I will say that post-divorce, just as an example, I was married to a pretty up there on the spectrum narcissist, and he got very sick a couple of years ago and he really didn't have anybody. And I decided that I would take him to his doctors and take him to the hospital and get his family that wasn't in touch with him to come and see him because it was pretty serious and dangerous. And so I put aside the things that were displeasing and I was able to get myself to concern, compassion, and then service to help him out. And so that can show up in a million different ways, but that's an experience of mine that I thought I would share.
And so too, I just got done with a meeting before we got together to do this episode, and she was crying. She broke down and cried, the client. I'm filing for her divorce, and she was explaining the very, very difficult life that her soon to be former husband went through as a child, unbelievably difficult, and she respected that he got himself out of it, but he hadn't addressed the residual effects of it,
mm-hmm.
and therefore could not be the companion in the marriage that she needed and the consistent father that was needed for their son. And she broke down and cried and she said, I feel like I abandoned him. I know what his past is like. I know how difficult it was for him. And yet I'm divorcing him. And I said, and you tell me if this was right. I said, look, this is no different than being married to somebody who has substance abuse challenges. You feel for them. Nobody really wants that in their lives, but for whatever reasons it is. And so you try and help and help. And then there becomes a point where you have to live your own life. And then if you have a child, you have to put that child even before you, and you have to craft a life going forward that is the healthiest. And if that means it's just you and the child primarily, you have to do it as hard as this is. So is that the right response? Is this?
Yeah. And I think that if what I would say to her is that it's so beautiful that with whatever those difficulties are, that you are still able to have such a soft heart for your soon-to-be ex-husband, and you have the opportunity to acknowledge and validate all that he's been through while still holding your boundary and going forward, because his pain and his inability to work on himself up until this point, you can be compassionate about that and still take care of yourself first. Because if you don't take care of yourself first, now you've dipped down into level one and you're a codependent, and that's not what you want to do.
And then level two, and you're very angry and you live your life in anger.
Yeah, you're resentful that you decided to be a codependent and you got stuck in there. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. I mean, this is such an important level, compassion, concern, service. I think it's ultimately important because I think this is where people get stuck.
Yes. They get stuck in one and two. And in fact, the statistics are that the vast majority of society spends over 80% of their time in level one and two. And just look at it. Look at the road rage. Look at the amount of pharmaceutical medication that's taken in this country. Addiction, suicide, overdose. So it's like we have a population that's screaming for some support. And in my humble opinion, having learned this process, I just think that it's a brilliant way for people to be able to own their stuff, pin where they are emotionally, mentally and emotionally, and do something about it.
Karen, do people ever come to you prior to filing to help them get through what I call the hard talk, actually presenting the idea of divorce to their spouse?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing that's interesting is I would say it's kind of like a third before, during, and after divorce. And so we certainly get people who, I've even worked with people who want to mend their marriage. And the spouse wants to end it. And well, they could want to end it, but why don't you and I work on mending it? And either way, you're going to be better, even if it goes the ending route. And then all of those hard conversations, I'm going to tell my spouse I want a divorce. I'm going to tell the children, like all of that. And this is really valuable. This is a really valuable tool to work through so much of that.
If you can, for a second, for those listening who haven't presented the idea of divorce to their spouse, any tips for how to organize themselves in some language to use?
You know, there's so many different scenarios, right? And so if we're talking about a garden variety divorce, it's probably very different, because when you get into the higher conflict, there are landmines. And so it's a little bit more difficult. I would say in general, when you're delivering difficult information, I always tell my clients, use the sandwich approach. When you acknowledge and validate somebody in the beginning of a statement, it brings their defenses down. And so we've spent, you know, Jill, we've spent the last 20 years together and, you know, say some positive things. You're a great mom. We have wonderful memories. And I care very much about you, or I want us to all be okay. That's the acknowledge and validate part. And then you deliver the hard message. We've been in conflict a long time. We've talked about this a bunch. We've tried whatever it is. I've made a decision and I haven't come to it easily. And then you end it with something positive. I want to honor our children. I want to honor our whatever it is. And so the best thing that you can do is don't make it a huge lengthy thing, but kind of acknowledge and validate difficult message, and then something soft and warm on the other side, like a bun with the burger in the middle type thing.
God, this is still all so hard. It's one of the hardest things to say, isn't it?
I suffered. So I made the decision to leave, and I suffered so much in making the decision. And then I suffered so much in sharing the decision. And my situation was high conflict. So I also made a decision to tell my children separate from their dad, because I knew that what their dad was going to say to them was going to scare the wits out of them. So I wanted to at least pour a solid foundation. And that was, God, what, if I'm divorced 15 years, that's like 19 years ago, and I can remember it like it was yesterday.
I know. These pivotal life moments never leave us. Yeah. And hopefully we can look back on them and say we did the best we could. We did it with honest intention and not to hurt, but for the health and welfare of everybody.
Right.
Because it is for them.
What I do want to say just about that too is if you are divorcing and you're angry and you feel hurt by your ex, it really does no good to admonish, to criticize, to like, you've made your decision and you're not going to change them. So try and stay away from all of that. And the other thing I'll say is, if you've already had the conversation 100 times and then you say what you have to say and they ask why, you don't have to have that conversation 101 times. You can say, you know, we've talked about this over and over again, and I'm not willing to go there right now. Like, you can set a boundary on that.
Biff. Brief, exactly. Informative, friendly, and firm, Bill Eddy.
That's it.
That's we right. You have to stick to it. You just have to stick to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so well said. Now we have mastered the fourth level of energy, and we're going to number five, peace.
So level five is the word on the chart is reconciliation. Reconciliation, peace, and acceptance. Now, I prefer, where's the opportunity? So reconciliation is, how do I reconcile with what's happening or how you're behaving? I prefer to say, where's the opportunity in how you're behaving and or what's going on? And so once we can find the silver lining, the win-win, we our emotional reaction is going to be peace. So let's say, I'm trying to think of a situation that would work here. So let's say your spouse came home and I don't know, moved money out of the account, right? Okay. So that's a really upsetting one. So they've moved money out of the account. And, you know, of course, you're going to call your attorney and find out what your legal rights are and all of that. So, and that's the other thing, is just create space. Like, one of the key things in this is you can't immediately react. You need to step away and allow to process this so that you actually come at it calmly. And so let's say your spouse moves money and you say, well, where's the opportunity in this? And what's the conversation that I can have with him or her? And what did I find out from my attorney? So let's say it's not catastrophic. It's a temporary thing. You have an opportunity to have a conversation with them, letting them know that you know, maybe coming at it with curiosity and why would you have done that and what is your thinking behind it? And when you go, well, either this is going to help us with the negotiation, or at least I know that what he or she did can be undone legally. I don't have to get all crazy about it. I don't have to get like raging about it and what have you. I can actually be at peace that I'm saying what I want to say. I'm handling this. That could be it. The silver lining in this is I have enough information and I, for the first time, am not going to scream and yell and rage. I'm just going to calmly say what I have to say, knowing whether he or she does or doesn't do what I'm asking, that my attorney has my back. And I'm going to be at peace with this because I can accept that this is all part of what happens. And that stepping into acceptance is so vital. And one of the key ways of stepping into acceptance is reconciling, is figuring out. And this is a whole nother paradigm I'm going to throw at you right now. But what if nothing is happening to you? What if everything that we face in our lives happens for us?
Yes, and aren't you the one that clarified for me that it was Byron Katie who said, life happens for you, not to you.
That's right. That's right. And that's a big part of like, what if, and for, I can't tell you how many clients come to me like completely freaked out. And then there's a point at which they go, oh my God, Karen, this is the best thing that happened to me. Like, I can't believe it. And not necessarily because I'm walking away from my marriage. It's because I have grown into the most amazing human being that I want to be. Like, I love myself. I'm so much more confident. I'm so much more conscious. I'm so much more intentional. Like, so level five is really being able to use that, that this thing that's happening, this behavior that's going on, there, it's here for me. What can I learn? How can I pivot? How can I grow? How can I communicate differently? And wow, what peace to think that anything that I'm dealing with is happening for me, then I can accept it so much easier.
Absolutely. You know, I spent a lot of my life saying, okay, I need to find the justification in these horrible things that I see happening around me. And if something horrible happens to me, I need to be able to justify it, or where's the fairness in life? And then when I got to a point, whenever that was, when I said, well, wait a minute, if we look at life and the things that happen to us as the right things that happen to us, for us, so that we can learn, so that we can grow, then everything is right. We're never a victim. But we have to stop with consciousness and say, okay, what am I supposed to learn out of this?
Yes.
And if you can just stop yourself for a second, you've really stopped and changed the course of that energy, haven't you?
That's right. And that's why, you know, more and more and more in today's society, you hear about meditation. Meditation is really there to help us notice our monkey mind. And as we become really skilled at noticing our monkey mind, we actually have the ability to turn down the volume. The monkey mind never goes away. We all have a monkey mind. But to your point, when you stop and you create space and your monkey mind is going, oh my God, this terrible thing, and he and she did these horrible things, and and then you can sit with it and say, if this is happening for me, where's the value in it? Where's the opportunity? We're right up to level five. Oh, there is an opportunity. Okay, I can see it. I'm not holding tight onto it, but I'm catching a glimmer of it. Let me give myself a little bit more time. Let me process this with a friend or a coach or a therapist. And you get there.
And the opportunity can just be that you get good,
yes,
at stopping.
Well, I tell you one thing.
Processing and calming down.
Divorce is the most fertile of fields for this personal growth work. I mean, the opportunity in divorce, and that's one of our taglines, is divorce is painful. It's also a phenomenal opportunity to reinvent yourself.
Absolutely. When I send my confirmation emails out for whatever meeting, mediation or filing, the very last sentence is, divorce is a new beginning. And I say, you know, people are going to read this initially if they haven't really gone through any stages, and if they haven't gone through the emotional divorce, in my words, in my,
yes,
go through the emotional divorce first, and then you start the legal divorce. Right. Because unless you go through the emotional divorce first, my clients taught me this. Unless you go through the emotional divorce first, the legal divorce is going to be hell on wheels.
That's right. And for those clients who come to us post-divorce, I had a fella, he was 2 or 3 years post-divorce, and he may have had a piece of paper and a settlement, but that's as far as it went. His every waking day, yeah, was still in mental dialogue and engagement with all of the triggers and the judgments and everything. When people come to us post-divorce, they move fast because we're tough love, we're no nonsense, and we just really invite them into seeing, like, he or she is long gone. You don't get to blame them for anything anymore. Sorry. The chip has sailed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's going on here, because the only one in control of what's going on in your life is you. And let's get you on the track you want to be on.
You said something. I just want to circle back for one quick second when we were talking about, I think it was, I guess peace and reconciliation. And you were role-playing a little bit, and the money was taken out. So there's a joint account, money's taken out. You're going to go there to pay half the mortgage, whatever you're going to go there to get, and now the money's gone. And even if you have other money to live on, you feel like you've been violated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though you're getting divorced, you still rely on some level of trust in some areas to keep on going, especially if you have kids and right. you have the shared account. But you said something, you role played and said, okay, you can approach the spouse and say, so I noticed that some money was taken out, but what was your thinking? That to me is one of the most neutral things you can say. There's no blame in that. There's just actually respecting that person and asking for their thinking. What were your thoughts on that? So that's a little thing in role play that can be kind of an ace, your little go-to statement. What was your thinking? Nobody asks that when you're getting divorced, do they? The garden variety.
No, because we're, and this is a whole nother tangent, but we are in judgment. And so I know what your thinking is. I know exactly what you did and why you did it and how you did it. I know. And there's no curiosity. And one of the things I've learned in all of my couples coaching is, couples generally think they know the other partner so well, and they just don't. They're just wrong so often. And so my favorite way of asking why is, help me to understand, and grab that, listeners, and use it. Help me to understand what you were thinking. Help me to understand how you see this working. Help me to understand. It's such a soft, gentle invitation into curiosity, and it's fairly disarming.
Right. Yeah. No. So there are little key things that we can say that will neutralize.
Yes.
And at least allow you to express yourself. Because if you stuff it, okay, I'm not going to say anything. It's really making me upset, but I'm not going to say anything. Well, you kind of have to say something, or you're just going to fester. But it's the way you say it. It's the words we use. It's the words we choose and the tone of voice we use.
And
that will
make
or break anything.
Absolutely. And I used to, when me and my ex were good, I would say to him, don't look at me with that tone of face. And so there's that too. So there's the words we say, the tone in our voice. And when you can, again, just create some space, just give yourself a pause of a couple of minutes or a couple of hours or a couple of days, depending on what you need, so that you can come to your, you said it beautifully, Judith, neutral. If you can come neutral, it just invites so much more. And then for those of you who are in relationships where perhaps you've been emotionally and verbally battered, then we're talking boundaries. We're talking something different. Nobody's suggesting that you walk in front of a firing squad. And that's where, you know, all of these conversations are general, and then you have to use your discernment.
Right. You have to adjust for your specific situation. Yeah. And if you are in a seriously abusive relationship, whether it's emotional or physical, you may need a third party to do the right. talking for you. And but ask that third party not to be, not to instigate anger, not to blow things up, but be the person you actually can't be and neutralize it.
Right.
You need people on your team like that. To finish off the energy, because I have a couple other things I want you to share with the audience. How long does it take to get to passion?
Yeah. So we live in all seven levels on a day in and day out basis. It's not like, you know, if you're listening, you might say, you know, I'm just in level one and two. You might be, but you get on the phone with a family member or a good friend or something and you swing up. And so I would say to the listeners, start paying attention. Start paying attention to what raises and drops your emotional energy. I love talking to my adult children. They live in different parts of the country than me, and I will drop everything. And even if they're coming to me with their own crisis, it's just, you know, that just blows my skirt up. I've got great girlfriends. I recently got a puppy. So there are things that I know that I can just plug into, Izzy, my puppy, being like at the top of my list these days to raise my emotional energy. And I also have become crystal clear on the individuals who trigger me. And I would say do that. Write a list of the individuals who trigger you. And my list is pretty short these days, but if you had met me, you know, 6 or 10 years ago, it might have been a couple of pages long, you know. And, you know, there's all types of peoples out there, and there's all types of circumstances. And when we can navigate divorce and life fully responsible for ourselves and willing to see everything as for us, it just gets so much easier and sweeter.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I really can. There are two other things I wanted to share. You have a 12-step divorce recovery series.
Yeah.
Would you explain what this is? Because anything that has 12-step in it makes me smile.
Yeah. Well, so going through my divorce, I ended up in Al-Anon, which is for the friends and family of alcoholics. And my dad was an alcoholic, and my ex had some other substance that he played with. And so that 12-step program saved my life and through the divorce. And my feeling is just 12 steps, whatever it is, everyone should go through the 12-step program. Their sayings, their slogans, their keep the focus on yourself, keep your side of the street clean, how important is it, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time. Like, I could go on and on about like great things. That's not what my program is, but that is the heart from which mine came. And about 2 or 3 years into Journey Beyond Divorces, being in practice, me and my business partner sat down and said, you know, it seems like there's so many common emotional challenges that our clients face. Let's see if we can sit down and put a list together. And the list was such that it fit 12. And I was like, I think we should do, and it was marketing too, you know, I'd be totally honest about that. It was very, you know, savvy. Let's do our 12-step divorce recovery program. And it started in 2016. Thousands of people have benefited from it. We get like incredible feedback. And I love that you said emotional divorce. I haven't heard too many people say that. And that's the thing. It's like, everyone's so focused on the settlement and the piece of paper. Without the emotional divorce, nothing changes. And what the 12-step divorce recovery program does is it actually helps you be able to use the seven levels of energy. It helps you. So step one is curb the conflict. It's about creating space. Why are you so reactive? And what does it take for you to become responsive rather than reactive in every engagement? That's a huge one. That's why it's step one.
What's the difference between responsive and reactive?
Reactive is a knee-jerk emotional reaction that bypasses your logical mind. Most of us regret what we typed, what we said, what we sent. And responsive is a thoughtful, considered response.
I can see that.
And so if we all, in 12-step programs, they say if you're upset, count to 10. If you're really upset, count to 100. Other people call it a pause. When we create space between the trigger. Now, we all know when we're triggered, right? We go from 0 to 100. We could feel the heat running through our body. Our jaw might be clenching. Our fists might be... You know when you're triggered. And what you don't want to do is... go back at that person, whoever they are, and for whatever reason, you want to step away and you want to let that upset subside. And then you want to ask yourself, why did that trigger me so much? That's where the jewel is. That's where the gold is, not in what he or she did or said, because once we heal and refine our triggers, he or she can say anything that they want and you'll be like, yeah, okay, whatever. As opposed to what you do right now, and you know who you are and what you do. So that creating space gives us the opportunity to really start that introspective work of, okay, what's my trigger? And I want to say this about triggers. Your trigger was there before your spouse. Your spouse did not create the trigger. He or she may know what it is. They may be able to poke around at it. But that trigger, whatever it is, whatever your trigger is, predates your marriage.
That is true. Yeah. Now, do we tend to, because I think you referred to it at the very beginning of our conversation, do we tend to bring people into our lives that cause these triggers?
We tend to bring people into our lives that will rub up against our triggers. In fact, we attract exactly that which will rub up against our triggers. And one of my favorite books to refer to people to is called Getting the Love You Want by... Harville and Helen.
Oh,
Hendricks. I know it's three H's.
Yes.
And what he says, and I love that book. It's like coaching in a book too. What he says is we magnetically attract kind of like the wounds or imperfections of our parents or our family of origin. And he said in healthy marriages, it's in the marriage that you heal and refine. In unhealthy marriages, you end up blaming each other. You can't see the wounded child in your spouse. You saw them when you got married. You saw them when you fell in love. But now all of a sudden, we just see their shortcomings. And so you get divorced. And that's where our feeling is, if you weren't able to refine and heal yourself through your marriage, then let's do as much of that as you can through your divorce. The truth is, according to Dr. Hendricks, when you have your next relationship, there's still going to be work to be done. And hopefully you've grown enough to be able to heal and refine more in that next relationship. But we attract it. And if you think about it, put two adults under a roof together, sharing finances and kids, and it's like putting two porcupines in a very little shoebox.
Nice analogy.
Yeah, we have quills. We poke at each other.
I have to say that I am impressed and amazed at people going through divorce that also work and that have children.
Yeah.
I don't know how they make it all happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
I don't think they do either.
It just seems to be just unbelievable pressure, and my heart does go out to everybody that I know that has all of this going on. I mean, I have enough with cats and my business.
Yeah, I do think it's such an interesting point, and I think that the children, it's like a double-edged sword. It's on the one hand, you know, you're putting so much time and energy into them while your whole life is falling apart, and on the other hand, what a beautiful focus to have, which many times throughout every day, you have to take your focus off of everything else and put it on them. And I, you know, my kids were barely in grade school when my divorce started, and I was a full-time working parent, and it was exhausting. It was exhausting, and I never had any time, and like really never had any time. And yet, they were also the joy and the saving grace and the deflection from the more difficult things. And so I do think that there's both the blessing and the difficulty in that.
You know, I can actually see that. And as you were saying that, I was visualizing even for myself, well, you know, I've got the mediation, the filing, the podcast. And that's a lot. So what do I do in this potentially emotionally stressful business of divorce? When I go home, my animals, I have outdoor animals that come to me that I feed, a variety of animals. And then I have my indoor animals. And all of a sudden, my focus changes from everything I went through in the office in my day to, I just love these animals so much. And so now that you have used the children as that opportunity to just focus on an area of joy that you have, my next question comes to you. And that is the parents that are so stressed that they share all their stress with their kids. Yeah. Can we help anybody listening to turn that around so that their children are their oasis?
Yeah. I mean, our kids give us an incredible opportunity to be present at a time where we're typically fretting the past and worrying the future. That's actually also step 8 in the 12-step program, is an entire practice on presence. And so our children, who even in the midst of all of that mess, they have their innocent moments. They have their, I remember sitting down and telling my daughter something, and she was so upset, and it had to do with the divorce. And she was in tears and I was in tears, and she turned to me and she goes, "Can we just play dolls now?" And I was like, "Oh God, yes. Let's play dolls. That sounds great." You know? Oh. And so, and you may look, you may be divorcing with teenagers and it's not quite that way. You kind of get, And so it's a little bit more challenging, but I do think that our children invite us to be present. And if you are of the ilk where you share adult information with them, all I can say to you is you would never intentionally harm your child. Don't share it with your girlfriend, your guy friend, your siblings, your therapist, your coach, your next door neighbor. Do not burden your children with what's wrong with their other parent or with what's going on in the legal. Don't share the numbers with them. Do not do that to them, because the burden that you put on their shoulders, I don't think any of us understand the burden that is on a child's shoulders. And it's like the golden rule. And so you have to process. I get it. And you might really want them to be on your side of the aisle. Don't do that. Let them, if there's a reason for them to choose one parent over the other, they'll do it in their time. And the other thing I'll say on this, because it's just such a big issue for me, is the less you bash your ex or your soon-to-be ex, the more likely your child is going to trust to come to you when they're having problems, when they need advice, when they're frustrated with the other parent. Make yourself a safe person. And especially if you're in high conflict, be that safe person that when they're ready, they can come to you because they know that you've been neutral.
I have never heard anybody say that before. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
That's what's in it for a parent, to say nothing negative about the other parent. As you were talking, I'm thinking, but you're putting an unnatural burden on their shoulders. It's not their issue. Whatever you have going on with the other parent, it's not their issue. That's what you have going on. Your kid's issue is if they have something going on with that parent, again, excluding substance abuse and anything right. like that, they want to love both parents. But to say that to remain neutral, to always be positive, to not say anything negative about the other parent, you have engendered trust and have represented yourself as somebody they can trust and come to, because even in this very critical emotionally critical situation in your life, you're not going to take license and share any negative feelings.
That's right.
So they can trust you to share their concerns about their own lives, and you're going to be supportive of that. That is so perfect. I've never heard anybody say that.
And when they do come, and if they come to you and they're struggling with the other parent, don't call the other parent. Do not call the other parent, especially if it's high conflict. If it's amicable, that's a very different story. But if it's high conflict, you can't change that person or you wouldn't be where you are. So focus on the children. I had situations with my kids and I would say, yeah, how did that feel? And what do you want to do about it? And why are you afraid to do that? And what would happen if you did that? And how can I support you? And I might then give them some suggestions. Dad's name never came up. It wasn't about that. It was just like we just talked about how everything that happens to you is for you. Everything that happens in our children's lives is for them. And we get to be the stand to help them grow emotionally and to build their toolbox.
Lovely. Lovely. So people can sign up for, go on your website, which we're going to give in a second. They can sign up for the 12-step recovery series.
Yeah. And just another, just 2 cents on the 12-step program. So step one is curbing the conflict. We have a step on being solution-oriented rather than problem-oriented. We have a step on shifting out of judgment and into curiosity, shifting out of resistance and into acceptance. We have 2 steps on emotions, one on grieving well and the other one on feeling to heal. And this is a society where that's not highly praised. And so we really give tips and tools and strategies throughout the whole thing. And so, yeah, the 12-step program also has a monthly 90-minute group call. So you get some real life coaching, and it also has a private Facebook community so that you get to share and connect and make friends with other people going through something similar. So especially for people who say, I really need something and I can't afford one-on-one coaching, but many of my private clients have also enrolled in the 12-step program. And that way, when I coach them, like today I had 2 sessions and each of them got a step. At the end of the session, it was like, okay, I really want you to drill into step 4. I really want you to drill into step 7. And so, that's all very possible.
So this actually sounds like the 12-step divorce recovery program actually feeds into the 7 levels of energy. It sounds like they complement each other.
Exactly.
Okay. And lastly, I want people to know you have your own podcast, and your podcast is called Journey Beyond Divorce.
That's right.
So you really have covered it all. You have covered going into divorce, dealing with divorce, and after divorce with the podcast.
And right now we're doing a Life After Divorce series, which is turning into just a life series. But so it does. It talks about everything. It talks about healing and manifesting and co-parenting and living a healthy life and being mindful and communication and like just it's filled with everything. And we also have, I'll just mention, a Voices of Celebration series, which I started, I think, last year. And we interview former Journey Beyond Divorce clients and what their greatest fears were. And if those fears came true, the answer is almost always no. And how they grew, both through their divorce and through a divorce coaching. And people have been writing in about how, especially if you're in the early stages, how encouraging and inspiring it is to just listen to these different stories. And it elicits hope and encouragement.
You know, I was going to ask this question at the very beginning, but it's a great question in the close. And that is, where does therapy and coaching, where do they meet?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of types of therapy out there. So I don't want to offend anyone, but and I've spent years in therapy. So to a very large degree, I am not a mental health expert. I am a life coach. Therapists, whatever their education is, from social worker on up, they're mental health experts. And so therapists often focus on the past. They help you understand what happened. They help you heal. They help to psychologically explain what's going on and connect dots. Coaching is really about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be. And so while we go so deep in the emotion, and we do visit momentarily the past to help connect dots, we're largely forward moving. And I will say, if someone has had therapy, and a lot of times clients will say to me, I've been in therapy, I know my story, I've got the dots connected, and I'm still freaking stuck. And that's when they catapult forward with coaching, because they've already done that deep work. And now it's like, but I still bite my spouse's head off when we're, and so it's like, now we're in the, and that's what coaching is. It's like, what's your situation? Every session starts with, what do you want to focus on? It's your agenda. And then we use all of these tools and we dig deep and they walk away. That's the other difference. When you're coaching, you walk away with an action plan. It could be a podcast to listen to, an article to read, an action step that's scaring the hoots out of you that you're going to take now. And so you move forward so much faster because you're working very intentionally between the sessions.
Love that. So Karen McMahon, you have given me, and I know the listeners, one of the best hours we've had. How can people get in touch with you?
You know, thank you so much for inviting me on. This has been one of my most enjoyable interviews, and I appreciate your thoroughness. You can find us at Journey Beyond Divorce. It's the website, it's the Facebook, it's everything, as well as the podcast. If you want to reach out to me directly, it's Karen@JourneyBeyondDivorce.com. I'd be happy to engage with you. And the last thing I'll say is, we offer a free 1-hour coaching call to anybody who reaches out. I don't care if you have a dollar or millions of dollars. And so it's our give, it's our gift. It's called a rapid relief call. If you go to journeybeyonddivorce.com, it's the button on the top right. You can pick your perfect time. You'll end up with somebody on the team, and you will have a 1-hour robust coaching call, not a sales call, a robust coaching call, and you will walk away with a lot of value regardless of what you do going forward after that.
I love rapid relief. I think that is ingenious that you've done that. I really do, because when people pick up the phone to reach out to any of us, they need help. Yeah. And they need help now, and they need your attention now. And they appreciate it. I really feel they are grateful. And thank you. I am grateful that you spent your time with us and shared your knowledge. This will benefit my life as well, Karen. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
And thank all of you, as always, for listening to the Amicable Divorce Expert podcast. Please go to my website if you would like to give me a topic idea, comment on any of our guests, theamicabledivorceexpert.com, theamicabledivorceexpert.com. You know that if you're listening, of course. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.